It is a fight over short-term legislation, a continuing resolution to extend current funding levels and avoid a government shutdown at midnight tonight. We're discussing how we got to this point on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. With funding for the government about to run out, Republicans pushed this week for a one-month stopgap spending bill to keep the government open until mid-February. The House passed a 30-day funding extension late last night. The Senate has just a few hours left to negotiate, and it's not looking that good. David Cannon is a political science professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's an expert on Congress, the presidency, and other topics. David, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
Well, the House voted last night on the stopgap funding bill to keep the government open temporarily, and it made it through. Now there's concern that the same won't happen in the Senate. What do we know right now at this point?
Well, late last night, Chuck Schumer tried to force a vote, the minority leader of the Senate, and Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, decided he didn't want to have a vote. And to most people, that signaled that it looked like Schumer had the votes to stop the continuing resolution, because Democrats have said that they want a solution for the DACA program, for the Dreamers, to be able to stay in this country. That obviously fell apart a few days ago and will not be part of this continuing resolution. And so the Democrats are sticking together, it looks like, with a few exceptions. There are a few Democratic senators who are up for re-election this fall who face a tough race, like Joe Manchin in West Virginia said he'll vote for it. But the rest of the Democrats look like they're probably going to stay in line, and there have been a couple of Republicans who've said that they will not vote for it. So based on that sort of attempt by Schumer last night to get a vote, most people think that McConnell does not have the votes to get this done today.
Democrats have criticized this, that they haven't been part of the negotiations and that they say this bill doesn't take up the major issues they're concerned with. Do they have a point?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's just a little more context and history on this, I think, shows why the Democrats are to the breaking point now. This is the fourth continuing resolution now that's been passed for this fiscal year by the House. They had one back in September that kept it open all the way through December 8th, and another vote that kept it open for a few weeks in December, then a third one that kept the government running through midnight tonight. And so the fourth vote then last night would keep it open for another month. And if you look at the Democratic support for these continuing resolutions, they were quite strong early on. In fact, they had a lot of Democrats voting for the passed the Senate 80-17 the first time and 81-14 the second time. But then by the third time, the Democrats are starting to get frustrated with the process. And at that point, there was 66-32 with 32 Democrats voting against, only two Republicans, Rand Paul and Mike Lee, also voted against. And so there is this growing frustration that this is not the way to run a government, to keep on having these continuing resolutions that just kick the can down the road and don't solve some of the problems that need to be solved. Primarily the DACA program is the one that they're most concerned about. But there are other things as well that they really think this is fiscally irresponsible to keep on not having a budget.
Yesterday, House Speaker Paul Ryan addressed reporters with a message for senators and citizens after the House passage of a continuing resolution last night. Let's take a listen.
I'm going to be brief. Senator Schumer, do not shut down the federal government. Do not jeopardize funding for our military and for our national security. Do not jeopardize funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program. It is risky. It is reckless. And it is wrong. I ask the American people to understand this. The only people standing in the way of keeping the government open are Senate Democrats. Whether there is a government shutdown or not is now entirely up to them.
So lots of blame going on here. What does blaming, how does that impact the situation?
Well, clearly both sides want the other party to take the blame if there is a shutdown. But on the simple math, we don't know yet if Paul Ryan's going to be right or not. His claim that Senate Democrats are the only ones standing in the way, it's not clear there are enough Republican votes that could have passed this, even if there wasn't a filibuster. Now, there is a filibuster in play right now in the Senate, meaning you'd need 60 votes to stop the filibuster and be able to pass the continuing resolution. And so if that remains in place, then there's no way that it will pass, or at least seems very unlikely. But on the other hand, if you even have two Republican defections and the Democrats stick together, they don't have enough votes to pass it even on a simple majority vote. And Mike Rounds of South Dakota and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, two Republicans, already have publicly said they'll vote against it. Mike Lee and Rand Paul have voted against the continuing resolutions in the past, so might lose their votes. And so it may not be correct that the Republicans would have had the votes to pass this, and it's just the Senate Democrats standing in the way. And so we'll find out later today when the votes are actually held how that plays out. But the blame game is really at the core of what's happening right now. And Republicans are likely to take the blame because this would be the first shutdown we've ever had where one party controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency. The previous shutdowns have all happened under divided government when the parties shared the governing power over the national government. And so that simple fact would seem to point towards blaming the Republicans. Now, on the other hand, I mean, Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are banking on the fact that Senate Democrats may be, in fact, providing the votes to stop it, again, depending on how many Republicans end up voting against it. And if that happens, especially because of the CHIP program, the health insurance program for children, that Republicans included as part of this continuing resolution to try to sweeten the deal and to try to make it more likely that Democrats would get on board and make it tougher for those vulnerable Senate Democrats who are up for re-election this fall to vote against it. And with that sweetener in place, it is a tougher vote for Democrats, and because they want to extend that program. And the House resolution did extend the CHIP program by 6 years. And so this does put some Democrats in a tough spot. And I think there are some Democrats who are worried, especially, again, the ones who are up for re-election this fall, that they may take the blame for this. And we don't really ever know for sure until this plays out and we see how the public responds. So it could go either way on who takes the blame.
David Cannon is with us, a political science professor at UW-Madison. We're discussing the looming government shutdown. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What concerns you most about a possible government shutdown? How could it impact your life? David, going back to the House vote, what brought the House Freedom Caucus around?
That's a really good point, because that's been the problem before for Paul Ryan, is that in the House, they needed Democratic votes to pass it, because the Freedom Caucus had been opposed to continuing resolution on grounds of fiscal responsibility, and they were threatening up to the very last minute yesterday that they were going to vote against it as well. And I think what finally convinced them to get on board was your previous question about the blame game, like who's going to get blamed for this. And Paul Ryan, I think, was able to convince them that if we pass it and show that we've got our act together in the House, then this will all hang on the Senate Democrats. And so I think that's what they wanted to push that responsibility and that pressure then on Democrats to vote for this. Again, especially with that chip sweetener in it that is the children's health care program that Democrats do want to be able to extend. So I think a lot of it had to do with looking towards putting more pressure on the Senate Democrats.
One issue that's come up as a concern about the possible shutdown is what impact it would have on our military. Can you explain for us what a shutdown could mean in the military?
Well, yeah, so this is a part of the rhetoric, I think, that has gotten a little overheated and really, I think, not entirely accurate, that in a shutdown, essential services continue. It's only so-called non-essential employees that are furloughed. And so if we look back to the most recent shutdown in 2013, when the government was shut down for 16 days over the dispute on defunding or potentially eliminating Obamacare. In that shutdown, we had about 850,000 of the 2 million federal employees who were furloughed. The other 1.2 million or so still went to work. And so this varies a lot by department. And so, like the EPA, Housing and Urban Development, the Education Department, about 95% of those employees went home in 2013. But if you look at the more essential services, the VA, the Veterans Administration, only 4% were furloughed.
And we're gonna have to pause right there. David Cannon stays with us unpacking how we arrived at this point on a looming government shutdown. He's a professor of political science at UW-Madison. Your questions and insights welcome. 800-642-1234. News is next. In an animated and rare late-night debate on the Senate floor, Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer and Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell sparred over the legislation, which would extend government funding for 4 weeks until February 16th. The measure would also fund the low-income children's health insurance program, CHIP, for 6 years and delay some taxes that are key sources of funding for Obamacare. We're getting up to speed this morning on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. David Cannon is our guide. He's a professor of political science at UW-Madison. Getting your thoughts as well on a looming government shutdown at 800-642-1234. Who wins and who loses politically in this debate over a government shutdown? Whose fault is it in this clash? Who's responsible for fixing this? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Dave now, who joins us from Menominee. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
Sure.
Well, you know, this thing with DACA is what's holding this thing up. And remember, President Trump said he'd sign anything that came to him. He'd sign anything that they put together, and Republicans and Democrats hammered out an agreement. President Trump agreed to it up to 2 hours before the meeting. And when they went to the meeting, a bunch of Tea Partiers were flanked Trump, who are now call themselves the Freedom Caucus. They hide behind that name. That put the kibosh on everything. So that's why we are where we are, because President Trump promised to sign this thing and then reneged on it. We've had, under Obama, we had a 60-vote threshold. That's what it was. We saw Republicans say it for 6 years. It takes 60 votes. Well, now they've got themselves in this barrel where it takes 60 votes for them, too.
Dave, thanks so much. And Dave is referring to the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. David Cannon, your thoughts?
You know, Dave makes a very good point here in terms of Trump's role in all of this. And Lindsey Graham yesterday morning expressed great frustration on exactly this point, where Lindsey Graham said that, you know, we don't have a reliable partner to negotiate with in the White House, because we'll negotiate a deal, we'll get something done, and then it'll all fall apart at the last minute. And that's exactly what happened with DACA. But even yesterday on the CHIP program, there was some momentary confusion based on a tweet that President Trump put out early in the morning, saying that CHIP should be part of a long-term solution, not a 30-day or short-term extension. And so all of a sudden, Paul Ryan and Republican leaders in the House were scrambling, like, oh my gosh, is the president really opposed to our extension of CHIP? And so it took some, you know, phone calls and then tweets clarifying what President Trump had said to indicate that the president actually was not going to oppose the continuing resolution because of including CHIP. But it was, you know, a very unhelpful kind of thing for the president to do at that late stage to pull the rug out basically from the Republican leaders on the CHIP program even. But Dave's exactly right on DACA, that Lindsey Graham and the Democrats, you know, who were negotiating this thought they had a deal. And up until 10 o'clock that morning, they still thought they had a deal, and they got to the meeting, and that's when the infamous vulgar comments that Trump made about Africa and Haiti were made public, and saying that he wanted, you know, more immigrants from Norway instead of those countries. And that, I think, really also kind of poisoned the well and made Democrats less likely to go along with this because it was clear that this was now a much more polarized kind of issue than it had been before, because Trump has indicated all along that he wants to have protection for the Dreamers, has been his position. But now it's looking like that's going to be a lot harder to do.
David, before we went to the news break, we were discussing the last shutdown in 2013. And looking at those numbers, the government lost more than $2 billion during that shutdown in 2013. And $24 billion was shaved from national economic output. So there are consequences if a government shutdown happens, are there not?
Right, absolutely. Yes, the $24 billion figure that you cite is from a analysis done by Standard & Poor's, and they figured it was about a 0.6% hit to GDP, which is, you know, not enough to throw you in a recession, but it definitely is enough to slow down the economy a bit. So it is a real cost in terms of lost productivity. And also, you know, just to also return to that point, we were talking about the effects of the 2013 shutdown. Just to emphasize a point I was starting to make before we went to break, that the essential services do continue in a shutdown. So the VA, as I mentioned, only 4% of the employees were furloughed. You know, they're working in VA hospitals, and they're not going to leave the veterans, you know, without services. Homeland Security, only 13% were furloughed. Department of Justice, that, you know, has the FBI and a lot of law enforcement, only 17% were furloughed. So it's more the non-essential workers who won't be showing up for work on Monday. And so the essential features of government will continue. In fact, there was some report yesterday that the President Trump was potentially trying to make plans to keep the national parks open. That's been one of the things that has taken a lot of heat in the past. The public, you know, shows up for their vacation and the national park is shut down. And that's a very visible effect of the shutdown. And so they were maybe going to try to keep the parks open even as an essential service. So we'll see how that plays out.
Let's go to Rana now, who joins us from Cannon. Hi, Rana. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Maybe I live under a rock. When did we start using this term government shutdown? It seems like, I'm 55, it seems like maybe in the last 10 years I've heard the term more and more. And is it just because we have more, you know, instant communication that we're aware of these things, or is this something that's kind of newly come to fruition in the last few years? Thank you.
Rana, thanks for the question. David, go ahead.
Yeah, a little bit of historical background. The first real shutdown we had was in 1995-96, when President Bill Clinton was battling with the Republicans in Congress on the budget funding for Medicare and other issues. There were a few earlier shutdowns during the Reagan years, and one, in fact, even when Jimmy Carter was president. But these were very short-term things that were more just a glitch that they had to, you know, furlough people for like one day to get some the money in place to be able to pay people. So there were a few earlier ones in the 1980s. But Rana is right that this is a relatively recent thing. Going back to 1995-96 is the first time we had a real shutdown that affected people. 2013, again, was the most recent one that had a big impact. But the reason we've heard so much about this in the last, I would say, 6 to 8 years is because it's become more and more of a bargaining tool. That we saw this during the Obama years quite a bit, where just to even increase the debt ceiling, there were threatened government shutdowns over that. And so it's become a bargaining tool that we just didn't see before, and it has become much more frequently used as a bargaining tactic anyway in the last few years. And those three shutdowns in 95, 96, and 2013 are the three real examples we have of actual shutdowns.
Are there uniquenesses about this possible shutdown that contrast from the previous ones?
Yeah, I would say there are two things that are unique about this situation. And one is the one I mentioned before, that this is the first time we've had unified control of government by one party. The previous three shutdowns were all under divided government. But the other situation here that is different is the fact that the key point that Dave mentioned in an earlier call of DACA, this is a point that the two parties actually agree on. Democrats and Republicans both want to extend DACA, and they just can't agree on then some of the other demands that President Trump is putting in, like building the wall and fully funding the wall. Now something's been added in the last couple of days to his list of demands. And so in the past, it's been things like Obamacare that really divided the parties. And that's why they shut down the government, is there's a fundamental disagreement on what we do with health care. But here, there's not even a partisan disagreement on the underlying issue, that both parties want to do something for the Dreamers. And so it really is pretty bizarre that we'd shut down the government over that.
David Cannon is with us. He's a professor of political science at UW-Madison. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What concerns you most about a possible government shutdown? What policies are worth shutting down the government? Tell us where you draw the line. How do you see the shutdown affecting the economy? 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Robert now, who joins us in Washburn. Hi, Robert.
Hi there. Here's my perspective. I'm an ecologist, natural scientist, and I've worked for the federal government off and on, mostly on for about 15 years or so, a series of seasonal and term and contract jobs. And I've been job hunting the last year since my previous four-year contract ended. And I thought I'd finally hit it big, and I finally got a permanent job and actually moved to Wisconsin here a week ago to start working for the federal government on Monday. Spent my last dime. I have something like $105 left. I bought rice and oatmeal and stuff to get me by until that 3 weeks or whatever, so until I would start getting paid. But if the government shuts down, I'm once again in limbo, and I don't officially work for the federal government until a couple of days after it may shut down. So that means even if federal employees wind up getting paid for the furlough time like they did the last time this happened to me a couple of years ago, I will not have been employed yet, so that'll put me back even further financially doing this. And this is, you know, I was around for the last furlough.
Robert, you were around for the last furlough in 2013. How did you get through it that time?
Well, that was only about 3 weeks. It was, you know, okay. You immediately apply for unemployment because you don't know how long it's going to last, you know, and you just hope that something will work out. And so we didn't get paid for that period, but then something, I don't know, a month or so later, we all wind up getting paid for that time. So it was kind of like a worrisome vacation, but it was a huge waste of taxpayer money because we couldn't do any work. And even when the government doesn't actually shut down, I remember in, 2011 or whenever all those threats happened, that one year, the first time it almost shut down, we spent an entire day that Friday doing teleconferences and all the things about, you know, what you can't do, you cannot do this, you know, if the government shuts down, this is what you have to do. And then it didn't shut down Monday. We wound up still having jobs. So
there was a ton of time devoted to preparing for the possibility of one, redirecting a lot of people's time. Yeah, okay.
And then the second time it was maybe we spent 2 hours, and then it finally got to the point where the email just said, well, listen to the news, and if the government's operating Monday, come on in.
Wow, what a personal perspective. Robert, thank you so much for calling in with that. David Cannon, he called it a worrisome vacation.
Well, yeah, Robert makes an important point there, that the workers do end up getting paid. At least in the previous shutdowns, it has happened that they do get their pay for the time of work that they missed. And so the cost to the economy comes in terms of lost productivity. And then the real cost then also, not just for, you know, tourists who are going to national parks, but things like, you know, FEMA, for example, while the emergency workers, if there's, you know, a flood or a hurricane or something, the FEMA workers will be there to help people, obviously, as essential employees. But FEMA does furlough the people who are working at their computers processing applications for aid from the previous hurricanes. And so they're, you know, still something like 360,000 applications for aid from Hurricane Harvey and another 400,000 from Puerto Rico that are still being processed right now. And if those FEMA workers are sent home who are processing those applications, that means those people who need that aid are going to have to wait for however much longer the government is shut down. And so while the workers end up getting paid, there are real costs to American citizens all around the country, depending on what the programs are.
Let's go to Matt now, who joins us from Union Grove. Hi, Matt.
Scenic Union Grove, home of the Broncos. How are you today?
Doing well. Go ahead, Matt.
All right. One of the things I just wanted to mention, Professor Cannon, when he was asked what the major differences were in the government shutdown, he doesn't mention that in the past it was the Republicans that were stopping the passage of a measure to keep funding the government. And in this case, it's the Democrats that are stopping this. I mean, with only a few Democratic votes, a measure to fund the government, even for a short time, could be passed. But clearly they're using leverage from DACA, wanting to get a DACA, some sort of a DACA bill passed. They're using that as leverage. Without that, which they will say they will not fund it. And the other aspect of this is, I know that we were talking about Donald Trump, and that, you know, he was the cause of all this. But I mean, I'm just a dumb truck driver, so maybe I'm wrong. But as I recall, Donald Trump wanted funding for the wall, which the Democrats will never allow, as part of that deal. So, you know, I saw that a DACA deal was possible if they gave money for the wall, which is compromise, in my opinion. But at the same time, you know, without any Democratic help, they're not going to get anything passed here with there being a 60-vote threshold on this.
Matt, thank you so much. David Cannon, flesh this out a little bit more.
Yeah, so two good really points there by Matt. The first one we talked about a little bit earlier in terms of the actual math of, you know, where the blame will lie. And, you know, is it on the Democratic senators if they don't support it? And that really depends on how many Republicans end up voting against it as well. And right now there are two who have announced they're going to vote against it, and there are potentially at least two or three more. And so if those four or five Republican senators vote against it, they only had 46 votes on the Republican side to pass this. And so, you know, you can't say that it's just the Democrats who would be shooting it down then, that if they didn't even have a majority within the Republican Party to pass it. And so that's, I think, we'll wait and see how the vote ends up going later today. And maybe it will turn out that the Democratic senators, you know, did torpedo this by themselves, and the Republicans did have 51 votes to pass it, had it been an even majority vote. But as we're talking about, it actually is a filibuster in play, and so you'd need 60 to get it passed. But the second point on DACA and Trump and the bipartisan agreement, Trump had confirmed that he would vote for an agreement that included funding for border protection, getting rid of the family-based immigration plan and the diversity visa lottery system. And so that's basically what the deal that the Lindsey Graham and the Democrats came up with in the Senate was a compromise that gave Trump pretty much everything that he publicly asked for. It was only after it got shot down and after the whole controversy about the comments about Africa and Haiti and Norway that then he sort of moved the goalposts and said, well, I want funding for the entire wall. I want all $20 billion right now, which had never been a demand before the negotiations. And that's why Lindsey Graham said that, you know, we don't have a negotiating partner. We can't, you know, we get a deal done and it gets pulled out from us 2 hours before a meeting, when he basically publicly said, I will sign that solution. He said he would do that if it included the down payment, basically, on the wall.
Let's pause
for border security.
Pause right there with David Cannon, who is a professor of political science, UW-Madison. Your questions and insights welcome. 800-642-1234. Back after the news. House Republicans passed the spending bill out of their chamber late last night, but the bill's future in the Senate is unclear. More than a dozen Democrats already have announced that they'll vote against it. The Senate adjourned late last night with no sign that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had or would have the votes to pass a measure to keep the government funded past today's midnight deadline. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. David Cannon is our guest. He's a professor of political science at UW-Madison. Getting your thoughts on a looming partial government shutdown at 800-642-1234. What concerns you most about a possible government shutdown? What are the most important values at risk as lawmakers work to make deals and compromise? Are there specific priorities that are non-negotiable? Join in or email ideas at WPR.org. David, there's bipartisan support, as we've talked about, for some of the initiatives that are tied into this debate, specifically in finding a solution for Dreamers and for the Children's Health Insurance Program. How exactly did these issues get drawn into this fight over an appropriations bill?
Well, that's a good question, because it goes all the way back to the struggle over passing a budget that started back in September. Because remember, the fiscal year starts October 1. If the government was operating properly, we should have a budget that was in place last October 1st. But it was disputes over how to pay for a CHIP that was a big thing that kept that off the table. And so that's not been funded at the levels it needs to be to be able to continue, you know, since October. Now, ironically, because of the tax reform bill that was passed, the CBO came out with an estimate saying that CHIP would actually pay for itself. It would be cheaper to keep CHIP in place than to get rid of it. And so that's what allowed the House Republicans to include that as part of the continuing resolution, because now it actually is budget neutral and may end up saving money to have CHIP, because it would be more expensive to have the 9 million children who are covered under CHIP actually get insurance through Obamacare. And so it actually would save taxpayers money to extend that program. So that one is definitely a no-brainer, and that will eventually get extended. DACA has gotten to be trickier because of what we talked about with the last caller when Matt raised a question about Trump's position, because, you know, they thought they had a deal with Trump, and Trump said he was going to sign it, and then now he's talking about fully funding the wall, which is definitely a non-starter for the Democrats. And if that gets included as part of the extending protections to the Dreamers, then we have a real problem on that issue.
And so what about the March 5th deadline then for Dreamers?
Well, right. That's the real deadline that's approaching, is that President Trump said he wanted, when he originally suspended the program for, I believe it was 6 months, said he wanted Congress to come up with a fix to the Dreamers. That was the deadline then, was the March 5th deadline. Oh. Now, we have the other complication of this district court opinion that basically put on hold the suspension of Obama's actions. And so that will have to have some resolution of the courts before that March 5th deadline would become a hard deadline.
So the continuing resolution that was passed by the House is the fourth measure since the 2018 federal fiscal year, as you just discussed. What is the broader effect of this chronic funding gridlock on Congress?
Well, one problem is that we've talked earlier about the impact on the military. Well, when a continuing resolution is approved, you're just approving it at last year's funding levels. And so if there are programs that need additional funding or pay raises for the troops or other, you know, things that we need for our national security, that doesn't get funded in continuing resolution. And so when you talk about hurting the military, the continuing resolution itself hurts the military if indeed they need more spending for different programs or again, just regular cost of living kind of pay raises. And so the continuing resolution is really not a good way to govern, because you're not making rational decisions over which programs you want to fund more, which you want to maybe cut back on, but instead you're just continuing that funding at last year's level, and it really is a sign of the dysfunction in Congress right now.
Let's go to David now, who joins us from Madison. Hi, David.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I have a question about DACA. DACA is a illegal program in my eyes for illegal immigrants. How can we continue to fund that when they are considered fugitives of the law?
So David here has a fundamental question about the legitimacy of DACA. David Cannon?
Yeah, so the Republican sort of critics of Obama's policy when it was implemented say that it was executive overreach, and that by using the president's discretionary power to enforce the law of the land, This was executive overreach to give that kind of protection to children who were brought to this country as children by their parents who did not have legal status. The Obama administration's response to that was that enforcement of the law is executive discretion, and that they were just deciding that their priority would be on deporting criminals and other people that are a threat to the country, to actually get them out and allow the children to stay. And so there's honest disagreement, and I think good points on both sides on that debate of, is this something that the president should be able to do unilaterally? That's a very good legal question, I think, and there, again, arguments on both sides. But the point, though, and is that both Democrats and Republicans said they wanted to have a permanent fix to this that would allow the Dreamers to stay. President Trump himself has said that he wants the Dreamers to stay. Dreamers are people who are serving in the military. They're paying taxes and going to college and universities, and they're holding jobs. And so these are people who are contributing to the economy. And it's not, just to correct one point that David made, this is not a funded government program in terms of we're spending money on the Dreamers. It's just an act that would allow them to stay in the country legally. So we're not spending taxpayers' money on them. In fact, it's just the opposite. They're bringing money into our country. They're doing essential jobs for America and contributing to our economy. And so it would be a net drain to our economy if they were forced to leave. And so that's why President Trump wants to be able to have them stay, and Democrats and Republicans both are trying to figure out what a solution would be.
Do you see this budget gridlock having any impact on the Trump presidency?
Well, yeah, it depends on how long it lingers and how long it goes on, because it is something that could end up being a fairly big issue in the midterm elections if this ends up being a significant shutdown that hurts the economy. I mean, I doubt that it will go on that long. I mean, the talk we're hearing this morning already of potentially a really short-term fix that would just take us into next week to give us more time to negotiate on DACA. I mean, so we still might have that resolution today and might not have a shutdown at all. And I would be surprised if we had a really long shutdown, just again because we have underlying agreement on the issue that's at stake here, that neither party really wants to see this happen.
Let's bring in Kurt now from Milwaukee. Hi, Kurt.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, on the DACA and such, I think we keep thinking about the past. We need to look at the future, secure the border, take care of business here, and then we won't have these problems keep popping up. I believe that the DACA people are illegal. Something needs to be done. Change the law. Quit kicking it down. And Congress needs to move.
So, Kurt, what do you feel about this looming government shutdown? How do you feel about that, using the appropriations bill here as a bargaining chip?
I don't think the government will get shut down. It never has. We keep paying the people anyway for not working. I don't see that as a problem.
David Cannon, how does the public feel about short-term spending fixes and chronic brinkmanship we've seen in recent months?
Well, I think the answer to that question is in the incredibly sort of low level of approval that the public has of Congress right now, that's at close to historic lows, that if you look at the public opinion polls that say, do you approve of the job that Congress is doing, most of those polls are in the low double digits, so 11, 12, 13% approval for Congress right now. So that's a pretty strong statement that the public really is pretty fed up with what's going on in Congress and their inability to even pass a budget. And so I think there is general disgust with just the dysfunction that we see right now in the national government.
So could this issue, this chronic unable to work across the aisle that we've been seeing, will this affect midterm elections this year? What do you see coming up in November?
Well, yeah, I think that there, this is going to be an election that favors the Democrats pretty clearly, that at midterm elections, almost always the president's party will lose seats in the House and usually will lose seats in the Senate as well. The Senate's a little different this year because Democrats are defending so many more seats than the Republicans are. There are, I think, 10 Democratic senators who are up for re-election in states that Donald Trump carried in 2016. And so it'll be a tougher case for the Democrats to be able to, you know, gain control of the Senate. But a lot of people right now are thinking the Democrats do have a pretty decent chance to gain control of the House, in part because of this concern over gridlock and the inability for the majority party to get anything done in Congress right now.
And finally, if a continuing resolution is passed that gets us through February 16th, then what? I mean, is that enough to get us through these issues, DACA, CHIP, et cetera?
Well, the good part about the extension through February 16th, if they do pass that, is we would get the CHIP problem solved for another 6 years. So the House resolution did include that six-year extension for CHIP, so that one at least would be taken care of. DACA still would be a tricky issue, and as we've mentioned before, we've got, you know, a potential March 5th deadline on that. And there are going to be, you know, some pretty tough negotiating that has to go on with Democrats and Republicans in the Senate to try to get that deal done.
Well, David, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
David Cannon is a professor of political science at UW-Madison. This hour of the morning show was produced by Brianne Shasso, Keely Boltina, and Nyasia Ellison. Brittany Williams provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer Kent. And this conversation about a looming government shutdown, you find it on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening.